And, of course, Mark Anthony, we're going to get into his book now, Never Letting Go. Fantastic story. Stand by on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Mark Anthony. Mark, how did you get involved in helping people, healing grief, tapping into the other side with that? How did you put that together?
George, I've always been interested in things that help other people. As a lawyer, I help people with their legal problems and their issues that have affected their lives that way. And I saw that so many people's lives have been shattered by grief through either murder or car accidents, suicide. And I made the conscious decision to use my abilities as a psychic medium to help them cope with grief by connecting them with their loved one on the other side.
Well, and you did a great job with that. What do people generally want to know about the other side, people who are alive?
They want to make sure that their loved ones are happy, that they're safe, that they're not alone. And, I don't mean to be facetious when they go, are they alone? And this is normally in a reading where five or six other spirits have come through with them, and it's like, well, if I can see six of them, I know they can see each other. But people are afraid that their loved ones are somehow isolated or desolate. And I can assure you that on the other side, it's a vast collective consciousness, and they certainly are not alone.
What do they say? What do the spirits say about the other side, Mark? Do they describe it? What does it look like? How does it feel?
I've never met a spirit that was unhappy about being on the other side. Now, we can spend our entire lives getting caught up in how someone we love has died, and I understand that, and I don't blame anyone for that. But they look at it very differently. They always say it's wonderful, it's beautiful. And it's interesting because I hear a lot of mediums say, yes, on the other side, there's this particular building, this particular setting. I don't think that it is buildings or a setting. Spirits project to us a point of reference so we can understand it. For example, I was doing a reading for this guy. His father was a cowboy, and his father's version of heaven was riding his horse through the mountains out west in the cold, brisk air. Then there was another guy who really liked gardening, and his version of heaven was this beautiful garden. Other people, it's a sailboat. So what they do is they project beautiful feelings to let us know that they're in a beautiful place. Because, George, we have a tendency to be able to classify things on the basis of what we can perceive through our five physical senses.
Sure.
So what is it like to live in an energy field? You and I can't really relate to that, so they have to give us something that we can relate to.
Do they talk about what it's like to be in a hellish-like state?
Many people, and myself as a Catholic, I was raised to believe in hell. I no longer believe in hell or an eternal damnation, but there appears to be several levels to the other side, and the killers that I've talked to that have to atone for the murders and the horror that they've inflicted on other people, they're not in an eternal state of negativity, but they're also not in the light. So they have to evolve and grow. One of the best examples I can give happened recently during a reading. This wonderful lady named Zoe, her husband was watching her two children, her four-year-old and her six-year-old. She went to Burger King or someplace to pick up dinner. Well, he had a bad reaction to his depression medication. They just switched him to a new medication.
While she was gone?
Well, for the couple days before that, they changed medications, and he said he wasn't feeling right.
Okay,
so maybe it was like 4 or 5 days before she left. Something happened. He took a gun. He shot his four-year-old son in the head.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, and then he went on the front porch, shot his six-year-old daughter in the head. Then he must have had a lucid interval, saw what he did, and then put the gun on himself. It was horrible. And this woman comes home, this is what she finds. I can't think of anything worse.
No. She goes out to get a little fast food for a little quick dinner for everybody, comes home, and they're all dead.
Yes. And
you talk about grief, Mark. Jeez.
Oh, my God. And what to make it even worse, her job, she was a professional grief counselor. And she said, oh, my God, she said, you know, everything that I've had to learn and go through, now she goes, I was really put to the test. And what she's done now is she's created this nationwide grief counseling group that people go to online. But in the course of the reading, her two children came through and her husband came through, and he kept begging forgiveness. Here was the interesting thing, George. Let's imagine on a frequency level, the children were on a very high frequency. The father was on a low frequency. The children could go down to him. In other words, they could visit daddy when they wanted to, but he could not ascend to their level. So it was very interesting.
He was like blocked?
He was blocked because he has to go through a forgiveness cycle, forgiving himself, receiving forgiveness from people here, and evolving on the other side. And Zoe said, well, I'm working on forgiving him. She goes, I'm trying to. And I certainly couldn't blame her if she was not able to. So in that aspect, he was in a not heaven dimension because he could not see his children. He could not connect with the people that he loved unless they chose to come to him. And I found that very, very interesting, because I'm learning every day. Every test, every reading is a test and is in a learning experience. I've done thousands of readings, yet I learned something new from every one of them. And there I got to see the levels of the other side, the heaven dimension where the children were versus the, I'm going to call it the purgatory dimension where he was.
Do you believe in reincarnation, Mark?
Absolutely. As a Catholic, I was raised not to, but working with spirits, I begin to see that reincarnation is a fact. And one spirit I connected with who had committed suicide said to me, all suicides must come back.
Must come back. It's almost like a rule, huh?
It seems that way. But I don't know if there are hard and fast rules, because there may be different reasons why people commit suicide. Maybe you're terminally ill and there's no hope for you, and you're very sick. Maybe you are completely out of your mind with, you know, mental illness. But if you commit suicide as a form of revenge, or just to really, you know, really inflict pain on another person, oh, there's going to be consequences to pay. Or, gee, I just don't like my life. If you think your life was bad this time, I'm sure next time it's going to be much more challenging, shall we say.
Mark, because you started this at a very early age, I don't think you ever had the moment to doubt whether the other side exists or not, did you?
Actually, I did.
You did? When? What happened?
Well, you know, it's very unusual, but even though I grew up in an environment where I saw spirits and parents that saw spirits, everybody, I think at some point or other, goes through a crisis of faith. And I went through a very skeptical period of my life as a lawyer where I began to doubt these things. And I heard one time, I was in church at this healing service, and there was this woman there who is sanctioned by the Catholic Church. She's an energy healer. That's what, you know, I would call her. They call her a gift of the Holy Spirit. And she looked at me and she said, there's a man here who has crisis of faith. And I realized she was talking about me.
Was she looking at you?
Oh, she was looking right at me. And I heard this voice, and the voice said, stop denying me. And I'm looking around like, that's not the voice I hear in my head when I think. And then I realized, you know, I really did believe in God. I was just going through a lot of skepticism and negativity. But then when my mother died, and she was a great psychic medium, I felt my faith drained from me. And that's not an unusual thing, because the stages of grief, your whole life collapses out from under you. And I've seen this phenomenon happen with a lot of people. And it was maybe a couple days after she passed, I couldn't sleep. It was about 3 a.m, and I heard the voice. And the voice said, remember, it is in dying you are born to eternal life. Now, I realize that that's the last line of the prayer of St. Francis, but it brought it all back to me, and I realized life is everlasting. I'm just in a pit of despair, and I'm depressed, so I'm lashing out. And we all go through periods of doubt. Even Mother Teresa, I mean, you know, talk about someone connect with God. Yeah, you know, George, she went through a period where she did not even believe God existed at all. So when I started thinking about that, it made me feel quite a bit better that I was in good company. And I think that doubt is part of the journey. And as a Jewish rabbi told a good friend of mine, how can you have faith without doubt?
Well, you know, and I'm beginning to believe that the other side is not the afterlife, but indeed is part of this entire existence of living, and that it probably came first. I think when we die, we go back to where we started.
I agree. And even if you look at quantum physics, second law of thermodynamics, energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. That being the case, the energy which creates us, our soul, our spirit, our consciousness, pre-existed the material vessel, our body, that we're in. And when that vessel ceases to work, that energy goes on. So when you die, you take you with you, but you had you with you before you became what we consider to be you. That's kind of legal.
With grief, the woman who comes home sees her two kids dead and her husband who committed suicide. I don't know how can you heal with that, Mark? I mean, that thing would destroy me, I think. Even if you believe in the existence of the other side, the pain would just be unbearable.
And most certainly it is. And many people might have themselves committed suicide as a result of this, or become alcoholics or drug addicts, or engage in very bizarre behaviors or have a nervous breakdown.
Right. And could you blame them?
No, not at all. And I see that so much in my law practice, that many people that commit these things, if you look at their background, you see that there have been horrible tragedies, and now they are acting out because of that. But grief is not something that you get over. Grief is a process that you go through. And the objective of the journey through grief is not, oh, I'm going to be all happy again. It is getting to a place of accepting the reality of the death, and through that, finding peace with it. That doesn't mean happiness. That means peace. This can take an entire lifetime to achieve. You may never get to that point, but one thing is certain. You cannot stay in the pit of sadness forever, because what will happen, George, is that your grief will take on a life of its own, and then it will become your life. That's a very unhealthy state to be in.
It will eat away at you. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
As you counsel people as an attorney and as a medium, how do you start? What do you do?
Well, I first talk to them about, well, what's the problem? What's the situation? And if they're there strictly for legal counsel, then that's what I do. But a lot of them start to ask, well, I've heard about you. And then things start to come forth. I was doing a client counseling for this young man named Tim. And Tim was a surfer. And all of a sudden I saw I'm looking at his rap sheet. And let's say May of the previous year, everything started. It was a drunk driving arrest, marijuana arrest. It was all, you know, it was all drugs and alcohol. Nothing real, real serious, but serious enough to land this young man in jail. And while I'm talking to him, I start seeing a female spirit taking form beside him. And I realize it's his mother, and I'm focusing on her, and he's going on, and he's talking, blah, 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 blah. And he looks at me, and he's looking over his shoulder, and he goes, what are you looking at? And I realize, uh-oh. He goes, you see things other people don't you? And then I realized he was sensitive to the presence of spirits, but he didn't quite understand it. I said, Tim, did your mother die about a year ago? Boom. Tears come on like a shower. He said, yeah, you know, she was a single parent. It was all he had in his life was his mother. And he said, ever since she died, I can't handle it. I started smoking weed. I started drinking. He goes, my friends don't want to hear about it. They're all a bunch of tough guys, surfers. They think I'm a wuss. I said, you know, don't be so tough on these guys. I said, you know, we all have tear ducts. We all have hearts. Tough guys cry too, Tim. And long story short, his mother wanted him to be in counseling, counseling, counseling. That's what I kept hearing. So I got him into drug and alcohol counseling, cleaned up his act, got him on the straight and narrow, haven't heard from him since. So I'm assuming that that was a good thing. But he kept saying to me, he goes, you know something about my mother, don't you? And then I finally told him. And he said, I think I believe this because I think I can see them too. But he didn't seem interested in working with his mediumistic abilities.
That's a great story. It really is. What do you advise people who don't believe, who don't think the other side exists? Can you convince them?
I've had people come to me that were skeptics. Some believe, some don't. My favorite story happened recently. This lady came to see me for a reading and brought a friend of hers. And her friend's a total skeptic. And she's sitting there like with her arms folded with a really kind of look on her face. So I'm doing a reading for this lady, and all these spirits are coming through, and this is really good for her. And then the last message, I feel a father. So I say to my client, your father is coming through. And I go, and I hear that Woody Woodpecker. I go, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And she's looking at me like I'm completely whacked. You know, now
you know, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, I'm feeling like a complete idiot now. Like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Well, the skeptic is crying, and I look over, and she's going, oh, my God. She goes, every night when I was a little girl, Daddy would tuck me in, and then like a minute afterwards, he'd open up the door to my room, stick his head in, and go, guess who? Like that. And I go, oh, so I guess that's your father, and that message is for you. And she goes, nobody knows that. That was just something Daddy and I did. It was interesting because this woman was, you know, I'm not going to speculate on her age, but let's say over 40, and she reverted into that little girl, Daddy, Daddy's what she kept saying. I'll tell you what, she's no longer a skeptic, and she has sent me more people, more people to me for readings than I think anybody else.
When I was a kid, I would do the greatest Woody Woodpecker impression.
And
I am not going to do it. You are the only one who's ever done it on this show before, and you will be the last one. Whoever did it on this show.
Oh, I think we should start a Facebook page. Get George to do Woody.
Oh, my gosh. So Never Letting Go. Where do you get that book? Where do you buy it?
Never Letting Go is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, but it's also in Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all fine bookstores. If you go to my website, neverlettinggo.com, you can click on those logos. It'll take you right to the order forms. But it's on sale everywhere. Llewellyn Publishing is my publisher. They're just an awesome company. And my understanding is it's available anywhere English is spoken.
All right, stay with us. Mark Anthony is our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. He is an expert in grief, and I'm noticing almost every phone line is lit. So we'll take some calls a little earlier with him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And by the way, on our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you. First couple hours, she's back. The Good Witch, Evelyn Paglini, joins us, followed by Lauren Weinstein as we talk about some privacy issues. So a great array of Coast to Coast programming for you on our next show when we come back with Mark Anthony. We will take phone calls. Oh, yeah, by the way, you know, normally the last Thursday of every month, it's Linda Moulton Howe's day, right? She's on assignment. She will not be on tomorrow. That's why we've got the other two guests. Linda will be back on November and December, two different dates because of the holidays, but she'll be back as soon as she comes back from assignment. So we'll be back in a moment with Mark Anthony. We'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Mark, have you ever had a time when you were talking with people, a clients, and it was very difficult, very emotional for even you?
Oh, absolutely. These things happen. I mean, the incident I described earlier where the woman's husband went berserk and murdered his two children and then himself. And when dealing with parents whose children have been murdered, it gets very, very difficult. But what I must do is be compassionate without being empathetic, because if I get involved in their problems and their emotions, then I lose my objectivity. And that's something that both a lawyer and a medium must be very aware of. If you start to get emotionally involved with other people's problems, then you will not be able to do your job properly.
Well, that is so true. And how do you continue to hone your skills, Mark?
I keep doing as many readings as possible. When I can, I go to England to work with the mediums over there. And basically, and this is advice I give to everybody who's interested in psychic development, is meditate. Because if you think about it, meditation is a way to erase the blackboard of your mind and just put one concept there and focus on that one thing. So the way I look at it is that when you wake up in the morning, think of your mind as a blackboard, and you write down every thought, every emotion, every impulse. By the end of the day, there's so many jumbled up things there. How can you make sense out of it? And one of the points of meditation is to be able to reduce that down to just one thought or nothing, which is really hard, is to think of nothing. But that relaxes your mind, and then you'll be able to focus better.
Mark, do you think so many people are interested in the other side because they truly want to communicate with their loved ones who have departed, or are they doing this for themselves?
I think both. The greatest fear of all is that your loved one has disintegrated into nothingness. And many people, maybe it's an egoistic thing, but you're afraid that you too might disintegrate into nothingness, and everything that you were, everything that you are, and everything that you could be ceases to exist. So the study of the continuity of life is very appealing to a lot of people, but it's also something that for at least 5,000 years, I mean, because Hinduism is the world's oldest religion. The Hindus have been talking about life after death, and every other religion talks about life after death. So it is something which not only inspires people, but gives them hope and, in my opinion, is a reality.
Good point. Let's take some calls here, and we've got a full hour of calls with you next hour, Mark. Ryan in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Ryan, thanks for calling.
How you doing?
Good. You too.
Well, I'd like to ask about an experience a few years ago. My father passed away, and it was pretty intense, but I was dating a witch. She was a Wiccan, and I had this dream. It's pretty powerful even to talk about it, but I was on a boat, and I was traveling over to like this big island, and I saw my dad. I said hi to him. We talked for a long time, and then I traveled back, and I told her the next day. And she said that there was a huge gathering of Wiccans in San Francisco that night that did this huge meditation where they all traveled on a boat together to the other side to visit loved ones. And she said I probably picked up on that and jumped on the boat with them, I guess. I also, at the same time, I got a whole bunch of crystals. I just bought a whole bunch of crystals, and was wondering if that may have possibly had anything to do with that experience.
Well, it's entirely possible, Ryan, and your girlfriend may have been correct. Maybe you did pick up on that energetic connection. But let me ask you this. Did your dad have an interest in the ocean?
Yeah, actually, he had told me when I was younger that he himself had had dreams of being on a boat.
Well, there you go. See, here's what I think. I think that you had a contact experience. And a contact experience is where a spirit is able to align his frequency with your brainwave frequency, and it happens when you're asleep. For some reason, people like me can do this in the conscious state, but for most people, it's very common to happen in the sleep state. And what your father was doing is he was giving you points of reference so that you could understand where he's at and how to communicate with him. By you going to the boat, crossing the water, is the symbolic reaching out from the material world that you and I live in to this island. And I'll bet the water was beautiful and crystal clear, wasn't it?
I'm sure it was. And And Mark, do you ever get to a point where you want to communicate with the other side, but that individual doesn't come in, but somebody else does or something else does?
Oh, sure. I was doing a reading for this lady, and her parents came through. She didn't want to talk to them. Her uncle came through, didn't want to talk to them. She goes, I want to talk to this one guy. He was a biker, and I was his nurse, and he died of cancer, and I want to talk to him. And she was going on, and just so seethingly angry. And I'm thinking, he can't imagine why he doesn't want to come through, you know. But he did not want to come through, and she got very, very upset. So sometimes that does happen. But usually in a reading, at some point, the person that you want to connect with is going to come through.
What happens when they go to the light? They go to the other side. Are they then gone for good?
No. There is a stage in near-death experience studies, and I see this in readings too. Your body expires, you step out of your body or emerge from your body, and you're normally greeted by people that you know who are dead. And in the near-death experience studies, you're only greeted by people who are dead. And then beyond that, there is the light. We believe that the light is a depiction of the spiritual energy of God, so that's something that we can understand. And people have a tendency to anthropomorphize God based on their cultural references. In other words, you put a human face on God based on what your background is. So Hindus see Hindu deities, Buddhists see Buddha, Christians see Jesus. But that is our ability to try to understand something which is infinite. I believe that the longer you're on the other side, you no longer have to use those human points of reference, and you'll begin to have a better understanding of the vast and, by our standards, incomprehensible nature of God.
Huntington, West Virginia, John's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, John.
I had a question. When you see these spirits, are they identifiable? Do they have features that you can identify, or is it just like a misty fog?
That's a great question, John. It depends on the medium. In my case, I see physical characteristics. When I'm doing a reading for somebody, I will first get a sense for the gender. I never refer to a spirit as it. Spirits are he or she. They have a gender identity. Then I'll begin to see physical characteristics. They usually will depict themselves, at least first, how they looked not long before they physically passed. And then I'll start picking up on other sensations, maybe how they died or physical characteristics, personality profile. So what it is, it's a building and growing. It's an energetic connection. And the longer you're in the link with that spirit, the more information you'll get.
Are you dealing with spirits? Is it the soul that you're dealing with, Mark?
Yes. We use the word soul and the word spirit as if they're separate. We don't have a soul. We are a soul. And a soul is a spiritual entity or energy which is immortal, and, you know, nothing can destroy a soul. So, you know, I hear all these superstitious things about, oh, his soul was destroyed by this, you know, evil creature. And it's like, no, that's primitive superstitious nonsense.
Next up, we go to James in Waco, Texas, east of the Rockies. James, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Mark, great show tonight.
Thank you.
I think the first caller kind of got a little bit of my answer, and I was wondering if our loved ones on the other side, do they contact us in dreams? Because I had a long time ago a vivid dream of my grandfather, and it was so real. I didn't know if that was the case or not, but I was wondering if they contact us that way through dreams.
Mark, absolutely. I would say yes, and I'm sure you would too.
Yes, absolutely. Spirits contact us in our dreams. Spirits come to our rescue because they feel us grieving, and they know that we miss them, so they reach out from the other side. And dreams are only one of the many forms of contact. In Never Letting Go, there's a chapter devoted to spirit contact and how to recognize when your loved ones are making contact. And you'll know that it is a legitimate contact experience if the conversation with your loved one seems as real as a conversation you have when you're conscious, and the dream has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it does not have those strange and bizarre, surrealistic components that dreams normally do. So if it feels real and it is coherent, that's a contact experience.
What is it about the dream state, Mark, that allows them to come through? Are we on a better wavelength or something?
Absolutely. If you or I were brain mapped while we're in the conscious state, that's we're producing beta waves. Our brain is producing beta waves. As we go to sleep, we drift into the alpha state, and it is believed on the alpha-theta border, because theta is the much deeper border of sleep, that at that point your brainwave frequency elevates. So look at it this way, George. You're a radio guy. You're the radio guy. If you're looking at an FM dial, let's say our frequency in the material world is at 89.5, and spirits are at 107.9. So when we're in that alpha-theta border state, our brainwave frequency comes up to about 101.1, and spirits are able to spot that, and they bring their frequency down to around 101, 101.1.2, and we get a frequency match. And that's why sometimes the contact is better than others, because you've got the medium, or just the person sleeping, and the spirit working to get that frequency match. Sometimes it's stronger, sometimes it's not as strong.
Do you find that most spirits want to communicate with the living?
Yes. Spirits love to get attention. And a big part of that is they want us to know that there's something beyond this life, and it is absolutely wonderful. And we can spend, let's say somebody we love dies. Perfect example, Queen Victoria. She was 40 years old when her beloved Prince Albert died. For the next 40 years, she had his clothes laid out for him every day as if he were alive. Now, that may not be the healthiest thing, but she also used to consult with a medium to keep in touch with Prince Albert. But I've seen people they keep their child's room the same way it was, and yep. Or they don't clean out a closet. Right, and they do this. And spirits will come through and say, you know, please don't do that, or don't worry about this, because their perception, they meaning spirits' perception of time, much different than ours. What would be 40 years in our reckoning might be just a few minutes. So they don't want us to be sad, because they know that we're going to be with them any moment now.
Well, what are demons then, Mark, and where do they fit in?
I don't believe in demons. I don't believe in hell. Once again, as a Catholic, I was raised to believe in hell and demons, but jerks die every minute, okay?
Yeah, they do.
They do. A big one died last week. On one hand, it was pathetic seeing Gaddafi beg for his life. On the other hand, well, how many people are you responsible for brutally murdering? So let's say energies like that, people like that die all the time. When you cross to the other side, you have free will, just like you have here in our world, and you can choose to evolve, to grow, and go into the light, or you can choose to continue in that negative state. But I think a lot of people misinterpret demonic entities. In Pensacola, the night after you were there, I went on a ghost hunt, and we were explaining that in a haunted house, which was kind of fun. And people walk in, they get cold chills, they say, this place is haunted and it's evil. A spirit is an energy field, and the spirit's energy field interfaces with ours. We have an electrical response, which is a tingling sensation, which people naturally interpret as fear. And so that's why a lot of haunted houses and quote-unquote demonic entities come across as negative and evil. When I walk into a haunted house, people go, this is haunted, and they're getting all cold chills, and I see the spirit, and I say, hey, how you doing? The spirit's like, hi. And so it's not that big of a deal for me, and that's one of the reasons I don't believe in hell and negative energies. I've done probably 5,000 readings in my time, not one demon, not one boogeyman. Yes, spirits of killers, spirits of people that did horrible things, but that doesn't necessarily make them demonic.
Now, the Catholic Church, of course, has a staff and a program for exorcists. So you're saying that those aren't real, those things don't happen?
No, I'm not saying that. I don't believe in demonic possession, but I do believe in channeling. And channeling is a form of mediumship. I'm what's known as a mental medium. In other words, and I've heard the joke, he's mental. But a spirit communicates with me, vibrates intelligence to me, and I interpret that through images that I receive in my mind and sensations. Channeling is like what Edgar Cayce did. You go into a sleep-type state, and a third party comes in and basically temporarily uses your body and your mind. And there may be very psychically sensitive people who are not trained and disciplined, and these third parties are coming in, and some of them may not be such pleasant spirits. They could be, the Gaddafi-type spirit. I'm not picking on him specifically, but spirits of that nature, or non-human intelligent species on the other side that are coming in. And basically, the exorcism process is a form of getting the attention of that spirit and empowering the person whose body is temporarily being occupied to expel that. So on one hand, I do agree that exorcism is true. On the other hand, I don't believe that it is demonic possession. I believe that it is the inability of an inexperienced channeler to maintain control.
Well, that's fascinating, Mark, and I like the way you think about this. And of course, you've been there. You've had that kind of experience.
I saw an exorcism once when I was in the Amazon. I was on this expedition, which was really interesting. It was about 13 or 14 people. We're on this clackety old boat like the African Queen, but we're in the middle of nowhere, and these Indians came canoeing up, and they said, the brujo is here, the brujo, and the brujo was the witch doctor, and supposedly there was a woman possessed by the devil. And I'm like, oh, I've got to see this. So we go ashore to the small village, and one of the people I was traveling with was an orthopedic surgeon. And long story short, this woman...
Let's get that. We're going to have to wait until we come right back. Mark, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be back.